Thanks, Tim. Well, here we are again, ready to step into chapter five with Roger Collis. One of the quotes that begins the first page of that chapter includes a brand new word, evolutionaries. It means people who are able to see the movements of nature, culture, and cosmos as one single whole, and at the same time, putting all those details into practice. Well, that describes Roger Collis to a T. Well, most of our speakers have found themselves linking the implications of eco-spirituality to the issues of theology and the church. Roger has been applying those same principles of wholeness and interconnectedness to government and policy making, to economics, and to education. To give you a sense of the arenas where he has been called to foster this new consciousness, here are just a few examples. The large nonprofit boards that, on which he serves, like Findhorn and the Whidbey Institute. Chairing the Governor's Task Force on Sustainable Economic Development in Washington State. Serving as an international member of Chernobyl's Environmental Remediation Technologies that spurred a decade-long effort in nuclear cleanup. Leading international delegations to China and the former Soviet Union. The years of developing nonprofit structures to incubate innovative projects at home and abroad. He's even been awarded two professorships from Chinese research institutions. Currently, Roger and his wife, Catherine, are forming a Scottish charity to restore and reopen Treban on the Isle of Iona, the sanctuary of the White Strand. It's a house of contemplation, renewal, and shared spiritual inquiry. So let's welcome Roger with our blessing song, taking that moment of well wishing and a deep breath while Tim cues up the chorus.
We bless you as you share your gifts of spirit, light, and insight. We welcome you with joy.
The podium is yours, Roger.
Wow. Well, thank you, Pat, for that introduction. I'll keep an eye out for Roger Collis and see where he is. Also, just to be a recipient of your blessings, it's quite remarkable just to be still and not do anything, and just have that sense of you blessing me and the program today, and it reinforces. What I think is so powerful is our ability to be a source of blessing and care and compassion for one another. Part of what I'm going to explore are concepts and ideas that are important to me and that I share with Catherine. Catherine sends her love and regards to everyone she has spoken here and I think has a connection with many of you. And we have a shared spiritual inquiry that we do between ourselves and with others as well. And that spiritual inquiry now includes, for me, the Word of Life, and just how much I have enjoyed attending these sessions, learning, but joining with you in an exploration, not as an expert, not as a scholar, not as an academic, just joining with you. And I just think it's so important that as we go into the future, we're able to companion one another and be there for each other. And that to me is sort of the nexus of what the new story is. And there's so much that has been written about it, from Tom Berry, onwards, really. I mean, it's quite remarkable, this new narrative of the cosmos that's emerging and looking at it from different points of view. And certainly ecological spirituality and the book that Diarmuid has written is another very, very good contribution to this reservoir of insight. But for me, what I want to talk about and what is close to me, because I guess my learning style is one of doing. I'm not someone who sits around and talks easily about something that's outside of me. I have to find a way to experience it for myself. And when I begin to experience it, I have a sense of what it is about and where I can make a contribution. So with this story of the scale of evolution that we have been discussing, I began to wonder to myself, can we get lost within that in terms of our own personhood, who we are? And I began to reflect on how important it is for there to be a spirituality that really looks at the everyday life, not simply the life of going to church or climbing a ladder for enlightenment and spiritual experience, but a new way of operating in the world, a new consciousness, if you will. And I believe that the new story is more about consciousness than it is about cosmology, though cosmology can help guide us, of course, and provide us with insight and knowledge, and perhaps our behaviors will change with that knowledge. But ultimately, it comes down to who we are and how we conduct our lives in our everyday life. And there is a concept which I really do like, which is the idea of the satellites moving around the sun, and the sun being the center point, the nucleus. And why I like this concept is that it portrays to me the old story. The old story is where we look to authority, we look to guidance, we look to the sun. And there are civilizations that have come and gone that have worshipped the sun gods, and it's been personified in all sorts of religious iconography, and the gods and the goddesses. And these civilizations and cultures and family structures and societies have evolved and in an amazing way and contributed so much to what is our humanity. But the new story, I believe, is what Diarmuid talks about, and many of the speakers and those who have written books and presented at other times, which is having a co-creative relationship. And that means that no longer are we satellites revolving around a single source of authority, whether that be an emperor, a king, the monarchy. No longer do we need necessarily to obey and feel the sense of needing the order to tell us how to lead our lives. And the massive shift, which I think is quite radical, and the radicalness of what Dharma is writing about is that it comes very much back to who we are, to our own sort of innate spiritual nature. And I remember when I first came to this country after a few years of settling in with Catherine, and I had a young child, and I would do journaling just to myself, really. And I came across a manuscript. It wasn't, I don't even believe it was a published book at the time, and it was from Stanford Research Institute. And it was called Changes in Images of Man. And it was one of the early works of Willis Harmon and Duane Elgin. And I was fascinated by it. You know, I had no experience in this whole arena of scenario planning and futurism, which they were experts on. And they had they reported on four futures. But the last future, number four, which struck me and I thought totally implausible at the time, was the notion of friendly fascism. That humanity or sections or individuals of humanity would give up their power, their determination to external forces greater than themselves, whether that be, you know, political figures or charismatic spiritual leaders, whatever it might be. But it was the notion of friendly fascism that struck me, and that has always stayed with me, the term, because it can be very subtle. You know, it's not, it doesn't necessarily have to be top down and militaristic. Usually it's charismatic, embodied in an individual or an institution or in an oligarchy that captures the imagination of many people who actually don't want to take too much responsibility for their lives. They're, you know, they're happy to go along with where things are. And I believe this, the idea of friendly fascism is at the extreme of this satellite sun relationship, where people somewhat are like sponges absorbing this energy that comes to them, and in many cases become sort of subservient, you know, to that, giving over their will and agency to a higher force. And the new story, all of what I believe is now happening is, you know, on the planet is a spiritual awakening. And it's a spiritual awakening away from the mindset that needs to be told what to do. And it's a different type of spirituality. It's a spirituality that is more person-centered. And when I talk about something that is person-centered, I mean the fullness of the individual, not just aspects of the personality for self-aggrandizement, but really the what is there at the heart of the human experience. You know, what is it that our incarnation is about? You know, answering the question, you know, why are we here, and what is our connection and to life? And this is what I think Dermer talks about, co creativity. Other people talk about co-relationships, partnerships, collaborations. These are all new ways of being in relationship with each other, with nature, and with the world. And one day, likely not in our lifetime, but institutions will start reflecting that in their behavior, and there can be new economic structures, political systems, and ways of organizing which are life-affirming. And as we know, we've heard many a time that, you know, the climate crisis is a spiritual crisis. So nature is letting us know that we have to go inwards to delve and go through a process of self-discovery individually and as a species to develop new capacities and new ways of being with one another. So I use this term sovereignty and agency. And I don't have enough time to go into the details of what that means, but it's this part of us that has the capacity to be a gift to others in our world, to be a source of blessing, to be a source of compassion and kindness. And to come into relationship with that requires us to be able to self-reflect and have inward honesty to understand the aspects of ourselves. And this is where I come to this notion of the human personality, that many traditions, and I don't need to tell you, within certain Christian streams, the personality is the source of evil. It's in need of redemption. It's a problem. It gets in the way of salvation and enlightenment. But I believe in the new story. The personality has a function, and it needs, if it hasn't already, be redeemed, because it's part of the sacredness of life. It's our way of interfacing with each other and being part of the human community. Without personality, we have no way of interacting with one another. We have no vehicle through which we can bless. And so in the reflections that I do, and many of you do in the Pacific Graduate Institute, and lots of work in depth psychology, and an extraordinary amount of research in terms of understanding the different aspects of the personality and those unintegrated parts or those shadow parts. But I think part of the work is to actually go into the silence ourselves individually, and to embrace that personality, to embrace those unintegrated parts, which Carl Jung talks of the shadow, or there are other elements to it. But the personality itself, I believe, needs redemption. It needs to be valued and seen as a necessity in how this new story gets applied, because we need the application in the world, and we need to have the efficacy and the self-love before we can actually love others. And I don't mean this in any narcissistic or egotistical way at all. But it means that one can have this sense of a light that lives inside of one. And it is the same light that exists in the sun, if we use that metaphor. So when one looks to authority, when one looks to spiritual guidance, that capacity lies in each of us. But it's been driven out by, because we have adopted certain inherited patterns culturally, ancestrally. We've taken a lot on. But in this transition that we're in now, which is a major transition in human development, we are now being asked to let go of what is not working and begin to look at what is. And I would suggest that the idea of us having greater capacities to co-create, to be in relationship with the world and with each other, is a necessity. In fact, it's imperative for our survival. If not, other forces begin to fill in the vacuum. And those other forces, I don't need to tell you about, but they're forces that perhaps don't carry empowerment. You know, their interest is more in their self development, you know, in the greed and the concentration of power rather than the giving away of it. And so part of what we're challenged with is the concentration of power in certain individuals, in groupings of individuals, and this has been going on forever. I mean, it's not something that is new. However, it takes on greater urgency because through social media and how things are arranged now in our social structure politically, and this is not in the United States alone. I mean, it's a global phenomenon, how these forces can fill the vacuum. So a part of me has become a protector of the rights of the individual, the agency of the individual, the spirituality of the individual, where we can know ourselves in relationship, you know, to the world around us. And I talk about sort of the redemption of the personality in that regards, and it's reclaiming something inside of us. And this is the idea of us as radiant beings, because the sacredness of life permeates all. As Pat said in her closing remarks last week, the center is everywhere, the periphery is nowhere. So, you know, if that's the case, then the sacredness is everywhere. You know, there isn't anywhere where that flow of energy is not present. So, in actual fact, the idea of hierarchy, of patriarchy, of the top down, you know, is sort of, it contradicts that. It's sort of saying that there are certain places where the sacredness is and certain places where it isn't. And so the idea of us having the ability to bless, that we have gifts, and I don't mean the gifts of the personality in terms of skill, but the birthright of our sacredness is that it flows through each one of us. It just does. I mean, it's crazy for it not to. And how we have allowed ourselves to think otherwise, I personally don't understand. Because I, as a youngster living in England, I felt the sense of wanting to contribute, wanting to give, and wanting to participate in an expansion of consciousness, knowing the challenges that we faced. But I, as Roger, had something that I would like to contribute to that. I didn't know how. And it wasn't at an intellectual level, it was very much in my feeling life, an aspiration. And I believe, you know, we all have that in one form or another, and we are gift givers to each other, and that builds, you know, family, and that builds coherence, and that creates the conditions through which healing can come into play. Because the healing is the creating of a condition, it's enabling a space, or so that those forces of that are seeking wholeness and congruence can come into being. But at the end of the day, it's up to each individual to discover their way of healing, of integrating. And as I don't need to tell you, but if we don't heal ourselves and come to the experience of inner wholeness, we project that out. onto other people, onto societies. And we blame. You know, we can blame leaders, we can blame parts of our families, we can blame our jobs, and we can fall into that sort of victim mode. And then we become prey to the oligarch, to the power hungry. And we have lost that sense of agency. And coming back to what Willis was saying, we've allowed those forces of, quote, friendly fascism to take hold. So at this pivotal time in human development evolution, I'd like to see as this spiritual awakening, we are turning, we are creating something. And it's not something that is going to be done for us either. And I think this is where this personhood, spirituality, the focus on the self is so critical, because we have to step into a capacity to actually be a partner with life, co-create with the natural world. But in order to do that, we have to put ourselves forward and enter into a right relationship. So as Diamond says, you know, God is coming to us. Spirit is overcoming us, but we have to find our way of reaching to forming that relationship. And that is sort of how I see the new story evolving. So in that regards, I'm most hopeful for the future and what is emerging as a great sort of spiritual awakening. So what I'd like to do, if you bear with me, because this is for me a bit of an experiment talking with you all in the subject area, because I don't normally present in this fashion, but I feel that you're all with me in this sort of same arena. You know, we are scouting out territory, we're looking at new possibilities, we're breaking down some of the forms that haven't worked and discovering anew what is seeking to burst forward, to break forward. So, if you don't mind, I'd like us to have a short meditation, which I will lead. And I'm going to lead another one later on, but this meditation is a meditation for the self. And you know, you will have your own way of coming into relationship with my words. And so please just use them as jumping off points. So let us just get ourselves comfortable. So what I'd like to do is to just honor all of the parts of ourselves, those parts that we doubt, our feelings, how our mind works. We are energetic beings, so we exist in this world and in another world of energy, of relationship. But let us just be friendly with ourselves and have that experience of a light that lives in us, the sacred, whether you call it the indwelling Christ, the Buddha, but the sense that there is an aliveness, a presence that is us, And our human personality is the way in which that is given expression in this world. So for a few moments, let us just be in silence with that thought. Thank you. So with the personality in right relationship with itself and with all of life, we can experience joy. We can experience unobstructed love. We can experience wonderment. Because these are all the capacities of what the new world is asking of us. Now, I mentioned that there's a part of us that is both in physical incarnation, but there's another world as well that we're in relationship with. And a friend of mine talks about the first and second ecologies. The first ecology is the physical world, the world that we see and touch. The world that is going through change through climate catastrophe, or it's the world that Dharma talks to in terms of bioregionalism and deep ecology. And it's a world, as environmentalists and others, we have a sense of what the challenge we are facing. But it can also be seen as somewhat mechanical. It's the world of things that are out there. But if one can look at the second ecology is that not only is this a living system, but it's a system that is energetic as well, that has its intelligence and ensouling life. And its own purpose. It's not just a bunch of stuff out there at random. It has, and the Greeks called it Gaia, and it was mentioned about the Gaia hypothesis of Lovelock. This is now, it particularly with young people, the idea of the living intelligence of the earth is very real. But it's an intelligence that exists on other dimensions as well. And just as we exist in the physical world, and there's other parts of us that are is energetic. Hence our thoughts, our feelings, how we conduct our lives impacts our environment energetically. And I think we all have had experience of this, perhaps not using the same words that I'm using, of this happening. So if we're energetic beings, then there are non-physical dimensions of life that are interacting with us. So part of our wholeness, part of our new story, is to be able to embrace the invisible kingdoms. And we make reference to indigenous cultures, to native peoples, and we look to their spirituality, their closeness to nature. And the nature beings and the Kachinas of the Hopi and the Zuni, there are many, many examples of connections to nature and the nature beings through indigenous culture. But what is the equivalent in the new story in our culture? How do we forge relationships and embrace those unknowns And in conversations with my wife Catherine, and with others who do spiritual direction and counseling, many people have a spiritual experience of one kind or another, but they've been talked out of it as not being real. You know, it's fantasy, or it's the work of the devil, or whatever it might be. Well, that's not all that helpful to them. But the new story creates conditions that says, "Oh, that's interesting. You know, that's possible," and creates the opportunity for that individual, that group, to share. You know, this isn't an analytical process of determining whether someone has an experience or not. One's just creating the opportunity for them to be able to share what is there in their lives. And I can tell you, and I think there's so much research and so many conferences about this, of people having their own sort of mystical insights, experiences, whatever you call it. It is more commonplace than not, given that there's a permissive environment for that to be shared. And it's the permissive environment that we have to create, with each other and for other people as well, so that they're not belittled when they have an experience and they're not talked out of it. And so the human experience of wholeness, in my understanding of it, has to include the non-physical worlds. Just has to. Then we are complete beings. And this is what Dharma, I met Thomas Berry a long time ago. He would have the same conversations and using different words to what we're having. And if you think of Matthew Fox, an original blessing, I mean, we have these thinkers who have gone before us, who have set the framework for these conversations that we're able to have now. And to add to the non-physical life, we sometimes split nature from human created artifacts. So, for example, technology, the cities, the buildings, cars, we sort of make a judgment about that and say, well, that's not spiritual, but going into nature is. Now, if the periphery is nowhere and the center is everywhere, that includes all of the physical artifacts of our lives that we create, even ones that are destructive. So, for example, I worked with nuclear waste remediation and worked with nuclear physicists and all sorts of things. And I had to come into right relationship with nuclear energy. And, to do that, I had to get over the fear of what it produced and its negative impact that it has on humans and on nature. But to realize that it too has its own sacredness, its own purpose, its own function. We may not understand it. We may have produced it at the nuclear defense sites, and we may have polluted the environment, like at Hanford, where I worked for a time, where it processed the plutonium for the atomic bombs. But that's a human-created activity. So how do we embrace it? We don't say that it's right. We don't sort of do silly things with it. It still gets stored correctly or processed, however it is, but it contains within it the spark of the sacred. And so part of the new story, part of the co-creation, is to learn how to work with all of that. And in a sense, a way to do that is to name and form a relationship, like with a car. So you give the car a name, you form a relationship with the car. The car, whatever it might be. I had a there was an old truck that I named Oscar. So fondly, we would talk about Oscar. Now, I don't know whether Oscar, really knew that he or she was a truck, but it was a fun name. But what you're doing is you're playfully interacting with the world around you, being open for possibility, which then creates the divine to come to you. And it might, and who knows what emerges, in that in that moment. So continuing, I just want to talk a bit about spiritual activism or the inner worlds, in that, yes, outer activism is important in however we go about doing that, but there's also the power of the inner activist. And I want to talk a bit about where this country is in terms of the fragmentation. And I know that you are all aware, but what is it that we do from an inner point of view? Not outwardly. I think we all may have ways to do that. But the important thing is not to be powerless and to understand that each one of us has a capacity, a gift. And so if you bear with me, I'd like to do a little exercise around the soul of America. So let's just close our eyes. And I use the soul in a sort of not in a theological sense at all. But just imagine for yourselves the beauty of this country and the land, the lakes, the vibrancy, the Great Plains, the forests. Mean, the land itself speaks. And within that ecosystem of relationship, we have the Native American peoples and their pain. And within this cauldron, there's the slavery, the immigrants first coming, the Civil War. I mean, it's quite a mix here in this country. But perhaps it was set up with this great ideal that was in the Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal. And the voice of Martin Luther King, of Abraham Lincoln, of native elders, point to a better America, one of wholeness, of where its gift can be given to the world. But that ensouling energy, I'd like to just see as a spirit of joy, of where all of the parts that make up this country can be reconciled and brought together. So in our spiritual activism, in how we go about talking about this country, how we talk about the politics to each other, we can talk about that great ideal that holds us all together, that is not divided. And so, in our quiet, let us just be with that there is evident at a deeper level of our beings in this country, a spirit of togetherness. And it extends itself to us, asking for our gifts and our strength and support. Thank you. So, the most powerful medicine is ourselves being able to offer the gift of who we are to the world. And for the soul of this country, during this time of great change, we offer our gift to it, our individual and collective gifts. And in a way that creates a reservoir of strength, a momentum inwardly that can be used to heal and bridge the divisions that this country faces. Now, I call that, spiritual activism. You may call it a different thing, and you may have different images in your mind around what speaks to you about this country, from your own background and interest. The only point that I'm trying to make is that it's critically important that we add a voice of possibility, that we are able to imagine a different future than what is being experienced now. And that's an act of our own agency, and that's the act of our own sovereign self. And that's not being a satellite to a sun, but that's being a radiant star of which the sun is. And as the sun enters the galaxy of other stars, it's millions of stars. And we are a community with each other of stars. If one looks at this word of life and life community, we can be at the intellectual level, we can talk, do all of the stuff, but that's a fact. We radiate presence to one another. And that presence is powerful. And the explorations that we do together, adds to a vast reservoir that for me is the new world that is seeking birth. And these questions, what is breaking through now? What are we letting go of? What is new? What lies in potential? These are questions sort of for us to answer in small groups, but they're actually timeless to me. They're questions that we can unpack, together and in small groups, because they provide a guidepost for what is falling away and where we need to heal and work creatively, but also where we have to focus and build a better world. And hold that tension, inside of us. And that's a very difficult thing to do because we get pulled into all sorts of directions. So the work to me is not at an intellectual level. It's actually a very personal one of coming into right relationship and helping each other do that. And the Word of Life does that through small groups and just the very intention of what it is. It's part of a vast network of outpouring at this planet at this time. So, and those questions that I posed, Tim, they're really for people just to reflect on. I mean, they're difficult questions in a way, but it would be wonderful to have a conversation afterwards about that. And so, in your small group, if you come up with a question or a pithy statement, that'd be great, because then we can explore together and unpack that question. So thank you all. Thank you, Judith. Thank you, Pat.
Do you want to read those for the group before we go off to reflection?
Yeah, I do. I've got them printed in front of me because in case I forget them, so I will read them again. What is breaking through? What at this? What is breaking through? This can be at the individual level, collectively, in families, small groups. And, what is being let go of? At society-wise, it's remarkable what is being let go of. It just doesn't work anymore. But also that impacts us personally. What are we letting go of? And the other question is that is not posted which I have is, what is new? Yeah, what is new? I mean, it's not business as usual anymore. There's something new bursting forward. And the final question, number four, is what lies in potential? And what lies in potential requires us to go much deeper, perhaps into the seeds of possibility. But if we can discover what those are for ourselves, we can help magnetize and bring to birth this new world that is a that seeks to awaken itself. So that's it, Tim.
All right, thank you. All right, friends, we've got about 15 or 20 minutes or so for reflection groups, and then 10 or 15 left with Roger to kind of keep dialoguing here. So you're going to get a little pop-up inviting you to go into your breakout room and encourage you to take that invitation, and we'll see y'all back here in about 15 or 20. All right, friends, welcome back. We've got about 10 minutes or so left for some concluding conversation with Roger here. So, Roger, I don't know if you have any opening comments, but if not, we can just see what's standing out to people.
No, I'd like to hear from others. If
Great.
there's a burning question or comment, please come forward to raise your hand. Don't hold back.
Everybody's being shy. Kitty, do you want to tell your story? Or I don't want to put you on the spot, but she's making a new story.
Well, I just can comment. Roger, the way you presented and had us be silent and be able to kind of absorb what was going on, I thought was very helpful. And what Judy's referring to is Ken and I have moved to Healdsburg to a retirement community, and the atmosphere here, it's a cooperation between Quakers and Zen Buddhists of San Francisco. But so I'm kind of in a space of not being any place. I've come to a different place. I haven't been here long. I'm definitely not any place. So it's like when you're talking, I thought, oh, that's okay then I'm here. But it's very painful to be no place. It's, that I guess we call it liminal space. But it is difficult, but thank you, Roger. It was very inspirational to kind of like get things alive again. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Kitty. And say hi to Ken.
Will do. Thank you.
The questions are difficult questions to answer, actually. I mean, they're really for inquiry over the course of time. To me, they're really great questions to explore together. But you know, we almost need a sort of a workshop of a morning to do so. Alice, you raised your hand, did you?
Yes, I did. I just, first of all, I want to thank you. That was a wonderful presentation with a lot of energy in it and a lot of thought-provoking questions. I think it's really important to pose the questions that I was saying in our small group. I think it's one of the reasons why Word and Life has been here just about 50 years. It's that spirit of inquiry and questioning about the deep things of life and being able to be in conversation with people whose experiences are different, and the openness to believing we can learn from people who have different experiences. But I forget whose poem it was, Rilke or one of the ones. It's not about answering the questions, but living out the questions until the answer emerges. And I think it, the heart of the thing is really to keep the questions going and being open to the different responses. So I think you that came through very clearly. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you, Alice. Jackie, you have to unmute yourself.
There we go. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes.
Well, I just wanted to say the reason we are all being so silent is not because we have nothing to say. It's because we don't know exactly how much to say. So many things that your questions brought out in our group that I wouldn't know where to start. But we all had a wonderful time exploring the questions, and we will go on exploring them because it's really opened up so much. What I was feeling slightly guilty about, the things that I am giving up as I age, feeling guilty about, suddenly I realize I don't need to feel guilty about that. That's not where I belong anymore. I'm in a new place. I'm doing more and more writing, and I have a new book publishing. And I didn't feel as though that's kind of a hobby. That's what I am meant to do. So that's a good starting point for me anyway. So I hope the rest of you all can feel that what you have to let go of is not a bad thing after all, because it leads to something else.
Thank you, Jackie. Catherine, were you going to say something, or is it just my imagination?
No, I put my hand up. I wanted to just say how depthful of speaking to the moment your time with us was. So valuable. Thank you for bringing us, like, I don't normally talk to groups like this. It's so powerful. And as Alice was saying, what she was saying, I remember when COVID struck, used to be with Word and Life, we had a lecturer, we all sat in chairs. It was face forward. And COVID gave us this gift, God help us, right? That we're here to be able to dialogue with somebody, with Maggie, who's in Vermont, and Jerry, who's in Oregon. And the possibilities, I think it speaks as an example to what you're saying about how there's more, like these things that happen. It's good not to get like dog dirt and just bemoan the stuff on my shoe. I can carry that somewhere else and fertilize something that needed fertilizing. I don't know. But I so appreciated it. And I loved, you know, clearly I took several notes. I love this. We are gift givers to each other. And that freedom of being able to exhale into that, what you called inner activism. What? That is a lot. And so thank you. And energetically, what it does to the field energy is amazing. So I might be one, but I'm one of many. I'm one of many of you stars all on the screen. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Catherine.
I just wanted to say that it's kind of built on the when Dermot spoke about the primacy of the spirit and how that is kind of, you know, breaking down the patriarchy that's so prevalent in our religion and our society, that that the spirit is the primary thing. And that really has been resonating with me. And then the other thing I was thinking of when you were speaking was the what's breaking down in our society here. And, you know, for years, good politicians have tried to fix things and make it better and that kind of thing. But, you know, it's really hard to do. And maybe with this breaking down that's happening, they'll have an opportunity to build back better. And, you know, we'll all be better for it. Might be painful getting there, but...
It certainly is a painful time for many. That, you know, that's for sure, because I know in the spiritual communities and organizations that I've worked with, there's some real challenge going on, you know, whether it be financial identity crises, and some of the aspirations that they were wanting to achieve just are not working out. You know, the things seem for many people getting worse. Now, I don't buy into that necessarily, but I do understand the challenge that you know, we are facing. And that's where this idea of interactivism, the sense of agency, and you know, there's a little saying that I have, you know, where attention goes, sort of energy flows. So, you know, it's where you place your attention. That's where your life force goes. And so for me, it's putting it into areas where one can make a contribution and be creative. And that can be, you know, in our families, that can be very localized. And I think when I talk about everyday spirituality, it's a localized spirituality. You know, it's very much in the here and now where we are, and not somewhere else. And I guess, you know, if I was making a closing remark, it would be to, you know, reinforce that and strengthen it. And Catherine, when you were talking about, you know, being a star, it within that there's potency. You know, we are powerful beings, and if we can begin to understand that and work with that part of us creatively, you know, there's nothing that we can't do, and that's the power of transformation that we're in the midst of and struggling to understand. That to me is the you know, the new story unfolding, that and we are that future creating it.
Well, I think we're close to time here. If there's nothing else that's pressing, perhaps Pat, you could unmute and send us on our way.
There.
There you go.
Thanks. Well, Roger, we have loved being in the here and now. Your thought, your energy, the stream of your spirit, that the immediacy that you have brought to us is what we all need. I think we're all going to walk into tomorrow's headlines and be able to look at it very differently and to lean into it and learn to love and gift it and use it as a reshaper of what's coming toward us. We thank you, my friend. Well, next week, Father Jim Clark is going to be joining us to explore Chapter 7, Nature's Secrets Can Recreate the World. It's a fascinating chapter, and you won't want to miss Father Jim's wisdom on it. So please join us next week, and I'll turn it back over to Judith.
And one more thing before we go to thank Roger is the luncheon that is coming up on the 26th. And we have decided, or we have figured out, that it could be hybrid. So if those of you, Jerry, people from wherever, can come and join us for the first part of it, not for the luncheon part of it, but the speaking part of it. All right, so that would be on the 26th, and it would start at 10 o'clock. But it's a potluck. So thank you. Let's oh
O'clock or
on
noon?
pardon me.
You said we start at 10 o'clock. Do we start at 12? The potluck?
We start, yeah, the potluck is at 12.
Thank you. Sorry.
I misspoke again. All right. thank you. All right, let's unmute and thank Roger. Thank you, Roger, for everything. We will
Thank you, Roger.
Thank you,
That
Roger.
was
Thank you,
great.
Roger.
Thank
A
you,
real privilege to be
Thank
with you all.
you. Thank you.
Fantastic. All
Thank
right.
you. It was great.
We'll see y'all next week.
A
Yay.
wonderful
Bye,
morning.
everybody.
Thanks,
Bye-bye.
James.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Tim.
Yeah, take care, y'all.
Bye-bye.
See you soon.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks
Yep.
again.
Thanks,
Bye-bye.
Roger.